acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 156, Be Mine. Tuesday, February 14th, 2017. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Each week, I put photographs, links to the things I'm talking about, and show notes on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, and off the shelf. I'd like to give a special welcome today to Lynn. Lynn is Yarn Dream on Ravelry. She introduced herself. She's from Lund in Telemark, Norway, and she is having a special fiber adventure with some fiber from Spelsau sheep. These are a local breed to her, and she scored some fiber from a neighbor. She is using the fiber in many different ways because there's a downy undercoat as well as a much more coarse outer coat, and she's spinning for rug work as well as maybe some garments or accessories, and it sounds like a really great fiber adventure, and Lynn is certainly proving herself fleece-wise. Happy Valentine's Day. I hope you are well. I have taken a pledge along with some students in the schools where I work to promote healthy relationships this week. I work with a group of teenage students who take a pledge to make healthy choices about drugs, alcohol, and tobacco. And they go one step further than that, though. Not only do they pledge to make good choices, but they're willing to be public. They're willing to express to their peers why they're making the choices that they do and to help share healthy messages around the school community. This month is National Dating Violence Awareness Month, and this week, the week of Valentine's Day, is the week of respect. And these students have launched campaigns in each school to spread awareness about what a healthy relationship is, what dating violence actually means, the fact that abusive relationships aren't necessarily physically abusive, but they can be emotionally, psychologically, and also financially damaging. And of course, there are all of the ways that social media can play into those themes. And they're really doing a great job around both schools to promote some of these ideas and share information. They are my heroes. And so on my social media page, even though I'm not followed by students per district guidelines, I am going to be posting messages about this topic also, sharing hashtags and different resources and just promoting these ideas during the whole week of Valentine's Day. So if you have teens in your life, I hope you will share some of these resources with them and just take the time, even just a few minutes this week, to talk about relationships, healthy relationships, and to make it clear that you care and you're ready to listen. There's so much pressure on teens today. Quite a bit of pressure to be in a relationship or have a relationship of some kind, that sometimes teenagers will be willing to overlook signs of an unhealthy relationship or even stay in a relationship they know to be unhealthy, just because the pressure is so great. And it takes a lot of times saying the right thing and suggesting the right path for someone to really change course in their behavior. So it's always a good idea to say it again, maybe in a different way, maybe in a different tone, and make it clear that you're available and you want to help out. You want the right thing for them. I've added some links and resources to the show notes for this episode in case you're interested in finding out more. The back porch. There was finally some snowfall this past week, and I got some nice messages from folks who remarked that I had been wishing for snow in my last episode. And finally, yes, we did get 7 inches of snow last Thursday. If I had known the universe would be listening to my request, I think I would have made a bigger ask. But as it was, the snow was very beautiful and everything came to a halt in my life, and I was able to spend some quiet time at home with a nice fire and working on my spinning predominantly. And I was able to ply all of the Shetland singles from Eloise in one day. That was really key because I was looking to have a certain amount of consistency in my plied yarn, and just being able to sit down and do that all during the course of one day really helped me reach that goal, I think. The spun and plied yarn is absolutely gorgeous. I'm so happy with the yarn that I have made. And there's such an amazing range of color and also texture and softness as well. It's not just that these 5 skeins differ in color. There really are a number of differences in the finished yarn. So just to take a step back and review my Shackleton project from the beginning until the midpoint, I suppose, that I am now. After completing the Fleecewise series with 3 other podcasters, I purchased a fleece together with Sarah of Fibertrek, Emily of Fibertown, and Claire of New Hampshire Knits. We bought fleece, I guess, just under 3 pounds at the New York Sheep and Wool Festival. It's the fleece of Eloise, a lovely little Shetland sheep. And without a scale, we divided that fleece 4 ways, and we each took some home with us. I had just over 10 ounces. We're each pursuing the cleaning and use of this fiber in whatever way we choose, and continuing to share the story of how we do that with our listeners and viewers. So for my part, I began by examining the fleece that I had quite carefully, and I noticed there were a lot of character differences in the fleece. There was lock structure, staple length, color. And so I separated all of this fiber into 5 distinct batches. I washed each batch. I wouldn't say I did a thorough scour. I wasn't really interested in getting every bit of grease and lanolin out of this fleece. I still wanted a little bit in because I thought that would help me work with it. It's quite fine. And so doing this in the colder months means there can be a lot of static buildup if you get that fiber too squeaky clean. So I just washed it. I give it 1 wash, 1 rinse, let it dry, and then I use my hand cards to create roll lags out of all of that fiber, keeping it in those 5 different batches. I spun each batch using a Scottish spindle called a Jalligan, which I purchased from Scott of Snyder's Spindles, also while I was at Rhinebeck. And then once I had all of the singles spun up, then I spent last Thursday plying that yarn. And I came out with about 400 yards of yarn in two different batches, and it was about 7 ounces of finished product. So as I worked with the yarn, quite a bit of vegetable matter came out. I did have some shortcuts and little neps and little bits that I pulled out. And I think that when I washed the finished yarn, I also removed a little bit more lanolin and thus some of the other weight loss is attributable to that. So overall, this has been just really a glorious project so far. I had thought about dyeing at least 3 of these different skeins of yarn, but now I'm wondering if I really want to dye that many because there are some beautiful color variations. And so I'm still thinking about that. It's likely I will not dye the yarn until the weather is a bit warmer. So the project is on hold right now while I do some other exploration. So jumping ahead to the finished project that I have planned, I would like to use this Shetland yarn in a colorwork yoke for the Bressé dress. I've knit the Bressé dress before, but this time I plan to change up the pattern in the yoke a little bit. There's a wonderful mushroom design that I think would be really cool on the yoke of a dress. So I need to research what weight of commercially produced yarn I should buy for the body of the dress, something that will match the yarn I have produced. And then I need to experiment a little bit with knitting that pattern. So I think that I will try knitting up the Kelly muffs. Those are the little mitts with the mushroom detail in them, the mushroom motif. And I will try some Jameson and Smith 2-ply jumper weight yarn. This will allow me to practice with the pattern, and it will also allow me to compare that jumper weight yarn with the yarn that I have spun up to see if it's compatible. If it is, then I can order more for the dress. If it isn't, then I need to keep thinking about what yarn would be appropriate. I find that just going by yardage and weight doesn't always work with hand spun because hand spun tends to be heavier for me than commercially produced yarn. And this plan will allow me to participate in Claire of New Hampshire Knits Mitten Knit Along. So that will be lots of fun. And I'm so glad that she has decided to include fingerless mitts in the knit along because the Kelly Muffs pattern is for a fingerless mitt. My goal is to complete this dress and wear it to Rhinebeck 2017. So that will have been a 1-year cycle and I think really good closure on this incredibly meaningful and instructive project. The front porch. After completing the plying of that Shetland fleece, I was really eager to get started on another spinning project. And I ended up by starting 2 new projects, one on my spindle and one on my wheel. It had been many months since I had done any spinning on my wheel. And after working on all that plying, I began spinning the Hog Island gradient set that I purchased from the Ross Farm at Rhinebeck. Hog Island has a very special place in my heart because it was really the first soulful stash that I acquired by really having done some research and understanding the sheep breed and knowing what it was that I was going to purchase. And of course, all of that was influenced by the wonderful Sarah of the Fiber Check podcast and her enthusiasm for Hog Island that infected me. And I made this first purchase at the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival a few years ago. And ever since, I have been very interested in Hog Island and what the Ross Farm is doing with this breed. So they had acquired 2 sheep, and then they obtained several more from the flock that's in Williamsburg. And today, Valentine's Day, the first Hog Island sheep was born on their farm. They have a little lamb named Valentine, and it's a really exciting new adventure for them with this particular breed. My purchase was 6 ounces of Hog Island fiber in 3 different colors. There's a very creamy white. It's not really white at all. It's quite ivory. And then a medium brown and a deep brown. And the deep brown especially is very rare. I have never seen anything like that for sale before. So what I wanted to do was accentuate the notion of this gradient even more. And what I did before I started spinning was to weigh each of those different colors and divide it in half, because I want a 2-ply yarn. So that means I need to create singles that are relatively compatible. And then from there, I took a little bit of the colors and I blended them to create a series of 5 different color gradations rather than just the 3 that I had purchased. And I achieved this by using my hand cards and putting some of this top onto the hand cards and blending it until I had these in-between ranges. I'm pretty happy with that job, even though what that means is I have a top that's will result in maybe a little bit more worsted spun yarn, and then my Rolex, which will be a little more woolen. As it is, the fleece of the Hog Island sheep has a relatively short staple length, and this isn't an incredibly smooth commercial top. It's roving, and even though it's somewhat organized and aligned, it's still pretty crimpy and disorganized in some cases. So I hope there won't be too much difference in the consistency of the yarn during these points where I am spinning Rolags as opposed to the roving. And I just started the very, very beginning of that spinning, but it will be nice to have that project on my wheel. And my wheel is now downstairs where I see it and can use it, and that will be a lot of fun. The other thing I did was to take a whole bunch of different fibers. I had 5 prominent colors as well as a bunch of undyed, naturally colored fiber. And it was mostly wool, but there was also some alpaca. I also had some Angora bunny, some dyed silk, some dyed locks of, I'm not sure what, Lester long wool maybe, something with a very long staple length that had been dyed. And I created 5 different batches using all of those different fibers, and then created about 4 ounces of Rolags. This will all be for meditative spindling over the next couple of months. And the colors are beautiful. There is kind of a rusty brown, a deep forest green, a gray, an orange, and a pink. And then throughout there are some magenta and really almost neon orange pops of color. But then quite a bit of undyed, naturally colored fiber as well, which mutes it a little bit. These Rolex are really fun to spin. I have taken to using a metal box, a metal cookie tin, and one of my Jenkins spindles, my beloved Aegean spindle. So it's been fun to carry that around and do some meditative spindling each day. Ever-expanding skill set. I had every intention of making a soup for the Taproot make-along, and which would coincide with the hashtag Power Pantry for the month of February, which is all about soups. And I thought the snow day would be the perfect opportunity to try this new soup recipe, and I didn't have coconut milk in my pantry. What? I thought there were at least 2 cans of coconut milk in there. None. So I made do with some leftovers because I have a practice of not going to the grocery store when it's going to snow. It's this funny little quirk that I have that every time there's snow in the forecast and, you know, everyone's, oh, and they freak out and everyone goes to the grocery store. I try not to go to the grocery store. I try to challenge myself to cook with what I have on hand. And sometimes you come up with some interesting combinations. So it was fine. I had enough for a different meal. And then later in over the weekend, I did make this soup, which has, it's a curried coconut and butternut squash soup. Very hearty and delicious with purple cabbage. And we also sauteed some tofu in butter, coconut oil, and with a little bit of garlic. And that was a really excellent topping. There was a lot of umami flavor in this soup. I think some of it came from the purple cabbage. I've never used that in a soup before. I've only used it to add a little color to coleslaw, frankly. Sorry to admit that, but I don't have a lot of experience using purple cabbage. But I think there was this sort of earthy richness to it, because Samuel kept asking, there's no mushroom in this soup? There's no mushroom in this soup? And I think what he was getting at was that there was this sort of velvety intensity to it that you would normally have when you add mushroom to something. It was definitely present in that soup. It was great when we had it. It's not so great as a leftover. The coconut milk has turned purple. The whole thing has kind of not a very great look to it. And the sweet potatoes got a little mushy after being stored in the refrigerator. So I think this is the kind of soup, if you're going to make a big batch, make it for a big crowd, eat it all up, and don't have leftovers. The recipe is ideal if you would like to participate in the Taproot make-along and you don't subscribe to Taproot magazine, because the recipe is on the blog. They have an archives a list of mostly recipes. There aren't really crafts or other kinds of things on there, but they do reprint some recipes, and it's a great way to try something out and participate even if you don't get the magazine. The other soup I tried was something I just had an idea for, that I wanted to make this loaded baked potato soup. I wanted the creaminess and the rich texture of a soup that you put a lot of cream into without using a lot of dairy. And so the ratio I came up with that worked pretty well was 3 cups of stock, 1 cup of whole milk, and 1 entire baked potato scooped out of its skin. I put those into the blender and came up with a nice base for a soup. So I used a baking potato for that. And then for the actual chunks of potato in the soup, I cubed new red thin-skinned potatoes, put them in cold water, brought them up to a simmer, and then simmered until they were not quite done. Almost like you do for potato salad, where you want the potato to have a little bit of toothiness to it. You want to be able to bite into it. And then what happened was that potato cooked the rest of the way when I heated it up in the soup. And it's all about the toppings for this soup. So the soup itself is very plain, although you can add parsley, you can add diced onion and carrot and celery and that kind of thing if you want to. We just focused on a lot of toppings. So I had grated cheese, I had crumbled bacon, I had very thinly sliced green onions. I forget if we had anything else. And we just loaded that up on the top of the soup. Absolutely delicious. And I think this idea is a contender for a soup at the getaway because I think I could make the base of the soup with a vegetable stock instead of a chicken stock. And then I could even experiment with non-dairy milks and see how that goes. And then the toppings could have, you know, some dairy, some meat, some non-dairy, and folks could just choose what they wanted to put over the soup. It's very customizable. And I think that flavor of potato is one that, you know, is really pleasing to a lot of people. So this is a contender. This is definitely a contender for one of the getaway soups. Also for the Taproot make-along, I have been working furiously on my journal cowl, reading Icelandic folktales and incorporating motifs into the cowl, and I have completed the knitting of the cowl. I just need to free up a US size 3 needle so that I can have a size 3 on either end and do a Kitchener bind off. Be really excited to see how it looks when it's all soaked and blocked. So far, I've just been doing a quick steam blocking every few inches or so just to see how the patterns and the different motifs look. So maybe in a future episode, I'll talk a little bit about some of the motifs I have added since I talked about it in the last episode. The Taproot make-along continues until March 1st, so there's still plenty of time to get involved. All you need to do is join in by trying something in the hands section of Taproot, any issue, and you can join in the conversation that's happening on Ravelry. Off the shelf. I thought today would be the perfect opportunity to share a Valentine poem with you. If you've been listening for a long time or you've listened to back episodes, you may have heard me share this poem before. I haven't checked, but it is one poem that I have memorized. It's by one of my very favorite poets, Naomi Shihab Nye. And one of the reasons I love it is that it's not just a Valentine poem. It's really not a Valentine poem at all. It's an Ars Poetica, which is a type of poem that lays out a poet's philosophy about poetry or the writing of poetry. So it seems to be about one thing, and you can certainly appreciate it on that level. But on another level, it describes how the poet approaches poetry or something he or she thinks about poetry. And that's how it is with this poem. Also, I love Valentine's Day, and I was thinking about why I love it. And I think it has to do with the fact that as a child, I was always very attracted to the idea of red and pink together. And of course, my mother always, I grew up on a farm, and my mother was all about things being handmade and very tasteful, and she abhorred garish things of all description. And red and pink, it was just unconscionable. And she would always dissuade me from putting those colors together in clothing that I wore. But I was just really attracted to it. And I always liked the way those little Valentine cards, like the ones that are available on Ravelry today, that you can send those like vintage Valentine cards, they always have a ton of red and pink together. And I just find that really appealing. So I think that affinity for red and pink is what keeps me drawn to Valentine's Day, even though I know all the things about it being a commercial construct and all of that. So this poem is called Valentine for Ernest, and it's by Naomi Shihab Nye. She has worked for a very long time as a poet in the schools, which means you go in and work with these kids you've never seen before and try to get them to write poetry and appreciate poetry. It's really a tall order, but I'm sure it can be a lot of fun. And she certainly has an engaging, lovely personality that I'm sure draws small children to her. And after she had worked with some kids and she was finishing her stint in this school, this very bold little boy walked up to her and said, "Here's my address, write me a poem." And it was Valentine's Day. So she felt compelled, and this is the poem she came up with. Valentine for Ernest. You can't order a poem like you order a taco. Walk up to the counter, say, "I'll take two," and expect it to be handed back to you on a shiny plate. Still, I like your spirit. Anyone who says, "Here's my address, write me a poem," deserves something in reply. I'll tell a secret instead. Poems hide. In the bottoms of our shoes, they are sleeping. They are the shadows drifting across our ceilings the moment before we wake up. What we must do is live in a way that lets us find them. Once I knew a man who gave his wife two skunks for a Valentine. He couldn't understand why she was crying. "I thought they had such beautiful eyes," he said. And he was serious. He was a serious man who lived in a serious way. Nothing was ugly just because the world said so. He really liked those skunks. So he reinvented them as Valentines, and the poems that had been hiding in the eyes of skunks for centuries crawled out and curled up at his feet. Maybe if we reinvent whatever our lives give us, we will find poems. Check your garage, the odd sock in your drawer, the person you almost like, but not quite, and let me know.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spy glass. Furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves lay down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a sweet nature, sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. The theme song for this episode is "Sweet," music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, recorded by Bovine Social Club. If you enjoy this episode, I hope you'll consider joining the Ravelry group or the Facebook page, following me on social media, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Each week, I post show notes, links, and photographs of the things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature play.
Two stoves out there stoving as a chipmunk on the lawn. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. Mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing.